Blog Talk Radio.
Another episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast and Radio Extravaganza. Oh, man. I love Wednesdays. That's when we record this. I don't know what time you, what day you listen to it. Our live numbers, as far as we can tell, are relatively small, but there is a raft of you out there who download the show and listen to it later. For those of you who are with us live, let me tell you right from the top that our call-in phone number, should you want to engage us or our sparkling guest, is 347-850-1769. All right, I'll wait for you to get a pen, and I'll repeat it again in just a minute. We're coming to you live from high atop the Mellow Mushroom in downtown metropolitan Franklin, Tennessee, and parts far and wide. Our executive producer,
We are coming from all over today.
Jay,
we got producer Jay. The University of Alabama. Hold on, Jay. Jay's not on record. I'm putting him on. All right, Jay, you're on.
I'm on.
We got producer Jay on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good.
So you're being orientated as a parent. What does that entail?
Well, it entails feeling really awkward being on an online streaming radio show with a bunch of parents milling around about me. So I'm trying to find a little private space.
Yeah. All right. We'll try to make it as awkward for you as we possibly can, Jay. That'll be part of the fun of the show. Jay's down at the University of Alabama, where I understand the weather is a little on the muggy side.
It is muggy as can be. It started raining as I was walking from one building to the next, and I'm completely soaked as I talk to you right now.
Oh, good. It just gets better.
But you walk
and
into
better.
These buildings, these folks believe in air conditioning. It's freezing now.
Yeah. All right. Well, roll tide. Yeah. And Mondo, you are where?
I am on my way back from Atlanta, so I'm somewhere in Georgia. So
we've got Alabama calling in, Georgia calling in. Nate, are you at the house?
Yeah, I actually am at the house. Nobody is high atop the Mellow Mushroom today. The studio sits shuttered and silent. But,
yes.
We're getting ready. Allie and I will head up to Nashville when the show is over. We had a couple doctor's appointments this afternoon, so that's where I am. And you, my friend, are in paradise in the central west of California, right?
The sun is just coming out. It was a perfect day yesterday to be at the fair. We did go to the fair yesterday.
Nice.
So, and it was the funniest thing because young Elijah, young six-year-old, was tall enough to go on almost every ride. And he went on all the rides his big brothers would not go on.
Oh.
Yes. To their humiliation.
Yeah.
And Caleb, the almost 11-year-old, was so angry. He's just trying to be cool. He's just trying to be cool. To which I said, maybe he is that cool. How do you know?
Yeah.
So that was really rough. So he did actually shame Caleb into going on a couple rides he didn't go on earlier with a friend the day before. So it's good when shame works in your favor, I guess. I don't know. So
it was good, except
for my wife got suckered into buying something when I was off getting dinner with the four kids. A snake oil salesman got her roped into something. And I know you know how this feels because I watched as your wife, I went in with your wife to a store in Gatlinburg, and you had to wait outside because you just couldn't watch.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know you know how it feels.
Absolutely, yeah. I sure do. Now, was this a state fair or a county fair, Aaron?
State fair.
Really? So that's the big kahuna. Wow.
We're
in county fair season here. The Williamson County Fair is this week here in Franklin. I don't know whether we'll make it over to look at all the 4-H animals and try the ring toss and the basket. I'm always pretty good at that basketball throw. I can usually be depended on to bring home one of those monstrous stuffed animals that then just creates a headache, you know, because you can't throw it away for a couple of years. Yeah.
That's totally true. Totally useless.
Yeah, yeah.
And they,
yeah.
And they aren't plush either. I don't know what they stuff them with, but it's not normal stuffing.
It's
concrete.
Exactly. Yeah, they must get a great bulk deal on those things. They can't pay more than $3 or $4 for the ones I'm bringing home.
And, even though you're paying $15, so
yeah. Oh no, come on now. I'm not going to brag. Because if I do brag, then at some point I'll be challenged to prove how good I am at tossing that basketball through the tiny hoop, and then I won't be able to do it. So I don't want to jinx myself.
Well, how's it going in Mondo World?
Yeah, shoot, Mondo.
Mondo World is busy. Went down to Atlanta yesterday and had a day full of meetings, and I thought I was going to have enough energy to drive right back. But I realized in my aging body and the lack of, energy I have these days. Around 9 o'clock came and I hit a brick wall.
Yeah.
So I figured, let me call one of my cousins and stay the night. And so I ended up coming back this morning. It was kind of, you know, my plan B was to come back this morning. I was going to try to come back last night, but man, it's kind of frustrating. I'm sad because I used to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like go down in the morning and drive right back. Now I can't do that junk anymore, man. It's
yeah.
kind of, humanizing. But everything's good, man. Everything's good. So we're all good over here.
All right.
Well, we wanted to share with our Pirate Monk community that we lost a brother last Wednesday. So, Nate, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Boy, a precious brother. Joe Perry. I met Joe Perry. Golly, at our very first 48 hours of Frankness. He is a fellow from Southern California who flew out to Nashville, where we held the first one, and rented a car and drove out to the campground where we did the event. Ironically, we arranged to pick up another Californian at the airport and give him a ride to the 48 hours of Frankness weekend. Turns out those two fellows were on the same plane because they were coming from the same airport because they lived only 5 or 10 miles apart and had never met before. It was a great weekend for Joe. He and his fellow Californian formed a bond and became Silas's out of that weekend. And that was a great start to his Samson journey, And one of the things that Joe and Silas had in common was that they were both fitness fanatics. But a year into that adventure, Joe's Silas died of a sudden heart attack while bicycling. It was a terrible blow for Joe. He managed to connect with other guys. He served as a Silas to other guys in California, including guys and the Left Coast brothers up in your part of the woods there, Aaron. He helped you guys, it was kind of a group effort to do a big 48 hours of Frankness, the biggest one we've ever done. I mean, that was just insane. Over 200 guys. Joe came up with some fellas from Southern California. He and Rob Conatzer was involved in that. And then you walked really closely with that brother for a couple of years, didn't you, Aaron?
Yeah, I did. He's a special guy.
Yeah.
So it was a it was quite a shock last week. So
yeah,
just want to honor him today for the walk he did, and
yeah,
excited for him to take this homecoming.
Yeah. Had a talk with his widow, Laura. I know you spoke with her as well. She called a couple days ago. In fact, she called during our Samson meeting here, and I stepped out and took the call. And what she really wanted to do was thank me and thank the Samson Society for, being the channel that God used to give Joe a life and to give them. She said this last year was his best and their best. And she credits that in large part to the freedom and the transparency and the fellowship that Joe found in the Samson Society. It was really kind of her to call. The funeral is today, and my heart is there. I'm sure yours is as well, Aaron. All right. Well, we will be back in just a moment with we'll open up the mailbag here on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Okay.
All right. We're back, and we've got mail this week. So, Nate, what have you got in your mailbag?
I'm actually going to disclose the name of the writer. I don't always do that. I don't assume that we have permission to give a guy's name on the air, but when a guy says, hey, this is free to share publicly, as this guy did, then I can tell you that this letter comes from Mike Page in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Hello, gentlemen, he writes. First, I want to say thanks for the podcast/radio show. I can't tune into the radio show, but the podcast has been my favorite since it started. As soon as a new one downloads, I listen right away. Thank you for being honest with us as men and teaching us to be honest, and most of all, bringing the gospel into that conversation. A few podcasts ago, Aaron briefly discussed the idea of transparency without vulnerability. This went off like a bomb in my head and has had a deep impact on me the past few weeks, and I've thought about it often. I think I understand the idea of being able to talk about things honestly as being transparent. But would it be possible to go a bit deeper on how that relates to vulnerability and how you can be one and not the other? I very often feel I'm transparent now at this point in my life, but I wonder if I'm not lacking vulnerability. It sounded like Aaron might use it to shock some folks, but is it possible to not necessarily be shocking others, but still be closed up? God bless Mike Page, Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, boy, once you start down the journey of really looking at those two things, it does open a whole can of worms in one's life, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, this is not the first time in my – I take a few phone calls from guys around the country, and one fellow who calls me regularly from Virginia has brought up that comment of yours several times. It was revolutionary in his life as well, Aaron. So what can you do to unpack this a little bit further?
I think we talked about it the easiest way to understand it is that whole window versus a door thing, where
mm-hmm.
the transparency is letting people see inside, and not always just to shock, but to show.
Yeah.
I think sometimes I've used transparency even just to keep people at a certain distance.
Yes.
Not a big distance, but just far enough away so they can't touch me.
Right, right, right.
So the door in is when I say, okay, I'm showing you stuff, but I'm also giving you a way to push back.
Mm.
Now, the Samson meeting itself is built to teach guys how to be transparent.
Yes.
It is purposefully setting up rules because, okay, when you start to get transparent, you're really removing your clothes.
Yeah.
And there's vulnerability automatically there. So when you start to get transparent, you feel vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Samson meeting, there are rules so that people don't start touching you. Because if they're not skilled at touching a naked person, that just feels inappropriate.
Yes.
That's why those rules are set up. But if you continue to be in a setting where you are being transparent, but nobody is touching or pushing back, then you realize that you can start to manipulate people by showing just certain parts of you and not showing others, and nobody ever questions you.
Yeah.
So vulnerability, and that's a big part of the Silas relationship, because in a Silas relationship, you've got somebody that pushes back and says, and I remember I love Scott Dente for this, because he is a great questioner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been on the phone with him, and I remember once I was talking about something I was dealing with in my marriage, and he cut me off in the middle and said, "Hey, I just need to ask you real quick, are you telling me the short version of this, or is that the way you really said it? Because frankly, you sound like a," and then I won't use the word that he used there.
Yeah.
And I said, "Absolutely. Oh, man." I said, I appreciate that you said that. I am giving you the short version. I was much softer in how I said that. But that's the perfect example of a guy saying, "Man, you don't even have to continue this story. If that's how you said it, I already know what the problem is. You're the problem."
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, in that case, I didn't happen to say it that way, but that's exactly what pushing back feels like. And I was in a position of true vulnerability because I was with a person who was skilled at pushing back, and he had permission.
Right.
So really, vulnerability takes at least two people, and you have to give permission. I think some people love messing with touching other people without permission, and that's just not cool.
Yeah.
But then sometimes we like to withhold that permission.
Sure.
So it's hard. It's hard to get vulnerable.
Yeah.
And by the way, I will say this. You can't simply plan on being vulnerable, because even that, by planning it, you've already become not vulnerable because you're controlling it. You have to be mostly out of control to truly be vulnerable.
Wow. Wow. And that's why I got to tell you, I'm good at transparency. I still struggle, brother. And you know this because you know me pretty well. I still struggle with vulnerability. I love to tell people what I'm thinking and feeling, but I don't like people challenging my thinking. I still hold on to this cherished illusion that I, you know, that I'm really my best advisor. So I, you know, I'll tell guys, you know, what I'm wrestling with, but then I want to work out the solution myself. I'm not a guy who is really quick to ask for advice, or frankly, really quick to accept it. However, if I look back on the progress that I can see in my life as a result of recovery, that progress has not come as a payoff for my own thinking. My own best thinking has gotten me in a world of hurt. It's when in desperation or humility or some, you know, brief moment of sanity, I allow somebody else to challenge my thinking, to ask the uncomfortable question, to make the suggestion that I would never think to make for myself, and then to follow that advice, that I've truly gotten different results.
Go ahead.
Yeah, what I'm also a master of doing, I'm a master at pleading to the lesser charge. If I sense maybe that people are on to me, in one habit of thinking or acting, I'll admit as much as I think they know, or maybe a little bit more than that. But to throw the door open, man, that's hard to do. That's very hard to do. Also, right. I'm pretty good at the categorical admission. I can do that. But we've talked. I think maybe I've talked on this podcast about, you know, this very uncomfortable conversation, but what in the end turned out to be a very helpful one. With it wasn't a Silas. It was actually a counselor who I was paying for this. So maybe that's why I answered him. He says, so you like pornography? Yes, I like pornography. Yeah. Well, what exactly do you like? Well, I like dirty pictures. Yeah, but what kind of pictures? And then, so then he starts to press. Do you like to look at women? Do you like to look at men? What kind of positions appeal to you? What attributes of the images appeal to you? And he wasn't asking for any kind of prurient interest. He wasn't getting a hit off this. But he was looking for clues for what my heart was seeking in those images. And as long as I hung on to those details, he wasn't able to be much help. There was a lot of insight for me to be gained, even as I was answering the question, because I wasn't even asking myself those questions. I wasn't getting a lot of insight into, where the barb was on the hook in pornography for me. Man, that was tough to be that vulnerable. But by this time, and he didn't ask me this the first time I was in the room, this was several sessions in. By this point, I trusted this guy. It was a safe place. I knew he wasn't going to judge me. I knew he wasn't seeking any leverage. I knew he didn't have a sick interest in this. And so I was able at that point to be more vulnerable in a frank discussion about pornography than I'd ever been with anybody else. And it was a very valuable conversation.
Well, so there's a key point right there. Vulnerability really takes time in a relationship to build that trust.
Yeah.
And another way that we can hide from vulnerability is giving confession and testimony, mm-hmm. which we've talked about, to confess, but it's in a wrapped up neat package that says, nobody else needs to touch this. I've already figured it out. So that's yet another way that we close the door on the response. Nobody needs to respond. Don't worry. But let me tell you all about it. So we have all these really clever tricks that we use that what we don't realize we're doing is don't touch this. What I would say to this friend from Lancaster is, this is a journey, and boy, I go through seasons of just feeling like I am absolutely hopeless in making myself available for vulnerability. And then I'll have a few good times with friends, allowing myself to be out of control with friends.
Yeah.
Is really important so that they get to see those parts of me. That's important. Yeah. So just to go on the journey.
Aaron, I have a question for you, man. So would you say that vulnerability is earned and transparency is not earned as much? You know what I mean? Would you say that?
I think the the right to touch my life is usually earned within the context of a relationship. Although I have been surprised by someone I've just met and something about them just seems trustworthy. So, I'm always open for that surprise. By and large, absolutely. The relationship.
And not to bark on the letter much longer, but I asked that because I had a recent situation personally where there was a friend who was a fairly new friend. There was a vibe we had, you know, this kind of guy you just click with, you know, and he was being very transparent with me. And I could tell he was kind of holding on to a few things, and I asked permission to push back a little bit, and he gave me that permission. We had a great conversation, but then he kind of got hung up with some things. So and my, I think, poor tactic was, well, let me be transparent to see if that kind of evens the playing field a little bit. Maybe if I put up, he'll put up a little bit more. So I put up a little something, and for the sake of that particular conversation, it worked out okay. However, moving forward, though, the next day and following, that transparency, I guess he felt because I gave him he gave me permission that I gave him permission, and he has since then been talking to me, you know, calling, texting, emailing me. A lot of pushback advice and unsolicited types of, you know, what I should not, the word says, blah, 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 blah. And so then I look back and like, man, where did I go wrong in that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's why I asked, you know, and I feel like, of course, I did ask him, do I have permission to push back with you? Now, he never, he assumed that I felt the same, like I'm okay with him pushing back on me.
Yeah,
right. Honestly, to be honest with you guys, I really wasn't cool with that. But
yeah.
but I guess he assumed that, and when he pushed back on me, it and as he's been pressing, it's very uncomfortable. So I'm sure there's guys listening that have been in that predicament too.
Yeah, this is you're touching on why this gets very messy.
Yeah.
Because this is about the body of Christ pastoring one another. There are ways that we lean on the clergy to do what we're supposed to do with each other as brothers and sisters in Christ.
Right.
But we do it pretty ham-handedly often, like in this case, where folks just start, you know, it's just awkward when permission hasn't been given.
Yeah.
So what you did is so great, and if the listeners understand that asking for permission and really leaving the door open for a no, you know, asking for permission, saying, and it's okay to say no right now, so that someone really feels that permission to go, you know what, I just don't think I can handle that right now.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Right.
Paul is such a great example of this when he was returning to Jerusalem on his third missionary journey, and over again, his friends and prophets were saying, do not return to Jerusalem. The Spirit has told me, don't return to Jerusalem. Nothing good is going to return to Jerusalem, going to happen. And every time he said, well, I'm going back to Jerusalem. He ignores everybody's advice.
Yeah.
But I love that the very people that he ignores accompany him with love and joy to Jerusalem.
Right.
And I think, man, that is a picture of the body of Christ, that they were able to give their most godly counsel, be totally blown off by Paul, and they still were in deep relationship with him and supported him in the decision that they thought was against what God told them to tell him.
Yeah.
And somewhere in that is the beauty of a messy relationship.
Mm. Right.
Mm.
That's good, man.
Wow. Wow. All right. Well, we have a great guest coming up, Crystal Renault, founder of Whole Woman Ministries.
A sparkling guest. You gave a little hint.
Yeah. sparkling, for sure.
Well, we're going to get her on the phone. And while we do, how about we break out that great Jars tune, Carry Me, Dead Man. We'll be back in just a minute on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Try to live.
That song there, Aaron. But
you know what? That was an incredibly slow fade, and I don't know why Mondo's fader fades slow. Mine cuts it out. So, Mondo, you're just making yourself irreplaceable because your faders work.
Well, thank you.
All right. Well, joining us today is a returning guest back from the early, early days of the Pirate Monk podcast. Crystal Renaud, founder back then of a group called Dirty Girls Ministries, author of the book Dirty Girls Come Clean, now director of the Whole Woman Ministries. I'm sure I got that name right. But anyway, joining us from somewhere in the American heartland, Crystal Renaud. Crystal, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me again. And Nate, I did want to tell you that I'm praying for your wife. I know that that's difficult. My best friend was diagnosed in May. Mm. So I'm kind of walking through that road with her, and so I can only imagine what it's like for you guys right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much. It's bringing us even closer together than we were before, and it's made us all the more grateful for the way God, through a recovery journey, has made it possible for us to do this together, you know, by all rights. You know, we ought to be living in separate houses, and we're not. She doesn't have to be alone. I don't have to be alone, and we can face life challenges together.
Yeah.
So now you're in Kansas City?
I'm in the Kansas City metro, yeah. I'm on the Kansas side of the metro.
Okay. And is that the better side of the metro?
It's the cleaner
Ooh.
Side.
Ooh.
And So, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with you or with your work, let's back up a little bit. You are, you know, I don't need to tell you this, but it's amazing to me how whenever I speak to mixed audiences, I speak a lot to men's groups, but I also speak to a lot of mixed audiences in colleges and churches. And it's amazing how many women will hang kind of at the fringe after the session is over And then they'll kind of make their way to me and they'll say, you know, I know you think that, you know, porn is just a guy's problem, but, you know, everything that you said applies to me. But you know, it's safe for you to talk about it because guys are supposed to have this problem. And there's just so much shame and so much desperation in the eyes of these women. You know that story, don't you, Crystal?
I very well know that story. That was my story for 8 years in my teen years. Mm. I came across a magazine in my brother's bathroom when I was 10 mm-hmm. years old. That pretty much was the catalyst to complete life change for me, and not in a good way.
Yeah.
It opened up all kinds of doors that hadn't been opened before. Mm-hmm. And through that experience, and also just through my own pieces of brokenness that I didn't realize I had, you know, it fed those insecurities, it fed those needs for intimacy, and eventually it became too much for me. It became, you know, more than I could handle.
Yeah.
And obviously led me down a lot of different roads that weren't just, you know, a magazine in a bathroom. They were on the internet every day, and phone sex lines and sex chatting and, you know, situations men I shouldn't have been in, you know, all kinds of buildup of what one magazine had opened myself up to.
Yeah. And were you a Christian as a teenager?
As a teenager, yes. I mean, I grew up with a very large God complex. You know, knowing that who Jesus was, knowing that, you know, what God expected of me, mm-hmm. knowing my mom was a Christian, very devout Christian, but I didn't have that personal relationship with him.
Yeah.
Until I was 16, and I was well into my addiction and deep in it at that point.
Yeah.
I went to camp, you know, church camp when I was 16, and didn't expect much of that. I was terrified of it because it would mean 5 days away from anything I could actually be doing within my addiction. But I was kind of forced into going to camp, and it was there that I found Jesus. You know, I really understood what it meant to accept him and to surrender to him. And of course, when I came home, I wasn't healed. You know, if anything, I felt more conviction. I felt more guilty. I felt more condemned because I made that decision with, you know, a very pure heart. Like, I really wanted that freedom that they were saying I could have, and I just didn't have it. You know, I didn't. And actually, it led me even more into a spiral because I was now walking this very fine line between being a good Christian girl and then this whole sin life that no one knew about.
Right.
And so it wasn't until I met somebody else who had walked the same road I had that I really understood what freedom meant. And that freedom was possible. From this thing.
Did your family know anything about this while it was happening at such a young age?
Nothing. No, it's not funny, but it actually is funny. My mom and I worked at the same church for 3 years. She had worked there 3 years. I worked there 7 years. But I started leading my first groups when she was working there, my first recovery groups. And it was going to be in the church bulletin and all this stuff. And so I had to basically tell her, hey, this little article is going to be in the bulletin. that I'm leading this group, and here, and I wanted to tell you why. And that was like 22 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, it was after I was already walking in sobriety that she knew anything about it. And of course, my dad didn't know. I didn't tell my dad till I was in the New York Times, because I was like, I don't think I can hide that one. So.
How did they react?
My mom was very gracious. Of course, she blamed herself. What did I do wrong? What could I have done? you know, those kinds of things. Just kind of put it on herself, and I had to reassure her, you know, you could have been the best mother in the world, and I probably still would have done this. Mm-hmm. My dad's a good old boy, like very much, you know, we don't talk about our feelings, we don't talk about our problems. But when I told him, he showed me a kind of grace I'd never seen from him in my entire life. And I'm probably going to start crying now thinking about that. Where he basically said, hey, kid, we all have our problems. You know, and good for you for overcoming it, you know. So, and that was the extent of our conversation about it ever since then. And that was like 5 years ago. So, but he's supportive of the ministry I do now, and he's glad that I have something I'm passionate about. So,
wow. How did you know? I know how pornography impacted my relationships. How shallow it made my connections with other people. Mm-hmm. How protective I was. How it crippled my marriage in ways that I wasn't even conscious of, that my wife was aware of but couldn't explain. How did the, you know, you were coming up through adolescence and then early in your 20s, and then even during the recovery process, how did pornography affect your relationships?
I think it affected every one of them in some way, whether it was in my family or whether it was friends in school or guys who liked me, guys who liked me who shouldn't have liked me, guys who didn't like me but used me, all of those types of things. They affected all those different relationships. For sure in my family, you know, we're not big talkers in my family anyway. Like my mom is, but I talk to her all the time now, but we're not like, let's share what's going on and go to church together. Like, we're the same family I grew up, you know. I wish that I had that, but that's just not what happened. So it was easy to kind of hide in my family, you know, hide what I was doing. Dad traveled all the time. Mom worked outside the home. Brothers were older than me and doing their own bad things. You know, so it was easy for me to hide it in my family. In terms of friends, I didn't seek friendships out at all because I knew that the possibility of being found out.
Right.
And also, it kind of, because it started at such a young age, it really left me kind of emotionally stunted, you know, where I really didn't know how to engage in a friendship relationship that in a healthy way. And I've learned that more even in my 20s, realizing that that was what happened back then and even affected me later in terms of having to like grow up and grow in my own emotional maturity. You know, so I didn't seek out friendships. The ones that I had, you know, were very shallow, didn't talk about much. You know, when I got involved in church after I was saved, and you know, I appeared as if I cared what was going on, you know. I didn't necessarily, but I sang in the worship team, you know, all the different things with people all the time, you know, elbow to elbow, but I was way far away from them emotionally. I didn't let them in too deep into my mess, you know. Even the day that I met the woman that Marie Miller, she used to be Ann Jackson, she is my best friend. She was the one that...
Oh, worlds collide here.
Yeah.
And she's
moving back to Franklin, which is exciting.
Yeah, I know.
When I met her, even that night when we talked for the first time, when I told her my story, it was all really super sweet. Like, I love the Lord. He's so good in my life, and I love serving him, and blah, blah, blah. It was so not real. You know, I did love the Lord, but certainly my life wasn't, you know, sugar sweet. In fact, that was the deepest, darkest point in my life that when I met her. But when she told me her story, it was, hey, I used to watch porn all the time. you know. So
yeah,
it was the open door for me to tell her my story, and that was the first time where I was like talking about vulnerability in the previous segment. You know, that was me letting go of control. You know, of finally letting somebody see my junk because I never had before, and being that type of vulnerability that I never even had felt before. And of course, it was painful, and I was worried about really the repercussions of telling her that. Like, what's going to happen now? Like, I'm going to have to like do something about this now. You know?
Yeah.
As opposed to just living in the secret that, of course, I kept telling myself I really wanted to be out of, but did I really want to do the work to get out of it?
Mm-hmm. So, Crystal, looking back, how many other girls do you think were dealing with the same issues?
You know, back then, I don't know. It's hard to say.
How about now? What do you think?
How about now?
Just an unscientific or scientific percentage estimate.
Oh, I think if you're talking about middle school girls or high school girls, I think 80% of us are faced with it.
Really? 80%?
Yeah, because you're bombarded with it, and you're also basically told it's okay when you have the New York Times best-selling book is an erotic novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also the extent to which sexting is relevant today. Guys sending girls pictures and expecting them to send pictures in return.
Yeah.
I think that I would hate to be a teenager today. I think I was lucky to have had the experience I had had. Who knows how much further I would have spiraled if I had had it today. Just the progression is so much faster today, too, in terms of first engagement in something like pornography and then what you end up doing as a result of that exposure. I think the behavior is radically progressive now, more than it used to be.
Yeah.
I remember years ago there was a study I heard about in Germany, because Germany was really saturated with pornography so much earlier than we were, and especially with women. And there had been a study on women's brain chemistry and how they reacted to pornography, since women, generally speaking, weren't as stimulated at a neurological level by images, generally. But because of that just inundation with images, the brain chemistry of women was actually being changed to become more like men over the years. Do you know anything about that? Or have you seen that girls react differently to images than in the past, where before it was more about the novels and the fantasy, but now images are a bigger part of women's struggles?
Well, with the women that we work with, it's almost entirely visual in terms of their appeal to pornography. Like, they're watching it. They're online watching videos, just like a man would do. And it's not necessarily that they're reading books, you know.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the pornography of today is a little bit different in that women are producing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're writing the storyline, if there is a storyline, to be more of that relational fantasy type material, so that you're actually easier engaged in it than just the pizza boy arrives and it's a sex scene, you know. So I think that's adding to the appeal of internet porn and other types of visual porn, because it's not just about sex. It's actually building a story. So I think today you're going to see that happening a lot more. You know, our ladies, it's definitely they're coming on the community and they're saying, hey, I watched porn again today, and I find it interesting, because for me it was, just to be honest with you, it wasn't as much about the porn as for me it was the emotional release of like masturbation. You know what I mean? Like that was more of like what I ended up getting to the most. that these girls are really—they're talking about they're watching porn. Like they're on the computer, they're sitting there all day long watching porn, which is a totally different, you know, thing to think about today than it used to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell us about the community of girls, women that you work with. How do people come within the orbit of your ministry? What kind of stuff are you doing for and with them? And mm-hmm. tell us too about the name change, which I'm very interested to hear about.
Yeah, I'll start with the name change. It's not necessarily a name change. It's a growth of our ministry.
Yeah, I like
you
it.
Know, Dirty Girls Ministry still exists. It exists mm-hmm. under the umbrella now of Whole Women's Ministries, where we also have our conference, Whole Women's Conference. So it's basically opening us up as a ministry to be able to help women in other areas of wholeness where they're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Dirty Girls Ministry is still alive and well. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's just underneath the new name.
Yeah.
And we changed the name because we were looking at that. We've wanted to rebrand for a long time because we understand that pornography is a symptom, you know, of so much
yeah.
more going on in a woman's heart. And so we want to be able to talk about those things and work through those things as well, because we feel like that's really like the issue more than the fact that they're watching porn. And so we decided that we would go with whole women ministries because that's what our conference was based on. We had
mm-hmm.
the conference first last year for the first time. And it was called Whole Women Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on the woman with the issue of blood in Scripture, where Christ says to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you whole."
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time in Scripture that he calls anybody daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he was, you know, we know the story. He was on his way to heal a sick child. He was stopped in a crowd because someone touched his robe, and that was this woman. And he stopped long enough for her to hear his story, to hear her story, and to make her feel like she mattered. Because her whole life, or the last 12 years of her life, she had been shunned, she had been isolated, she had been ashamed because of the situation she was in with her health. And we know that women who have these struggles also feel this, that same type of isolation and shame and brokenness. And all they want to do is be heard, because they don't feel like they can talk to anybody about it. They don't know that they can reach out and touch Jesus and get the healing that they need. And so we want to come alongside them and provide that opportunity to encounter Jesus ultimately, but also to find that hope and healing and restoration, and then equip them to do what God has called them to do long ago. But they have been too caught up in sin and these different things to do that God called work in their lives.
Wow.
And so we became Whole Women's Ministries, hoping to someday, when we have more manpower or woman power, to provide even more opportunities for that type of stuff to take place. But in terms of Dirty Girls Ministries, we have our online community. All you have to do is sign up. It's free. Everything we offer is free. And it's basically a community, like a forum. It's a little fancier than a forum that you can register and you can log on and you can communicate with all kinds of women from around the world going through the same things that you are. They're just trying to, you know, day by day overcoming this addiction and these struggles. It's not about perfection. It's about grace, and it's about always coming back, always getting back up, and that vulnerability to say, hey, I have a problem, and I am needing help. And we also provide groups that meet online and also locally, depending on where you're located, that go through a 10-week curriculum for recovery as well. And obviously our conference is coming up in September. We also have. So.
Yeah, tell us about the conference. This is an online conference, right?
It's completely online, which is different than it was originally. Last year was our first conference. We held it here in Kansas City. It had about 400 ladies in attendance, which was awesome for our first conference.
Fantastic.
And we partnered with a great church here locally to do that last year. In talking with that church and just talking amongst ourselves, we decided that we didn't want to limit who can attend this conference. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so as a ministry, we kind of have this unspoken, like, motto of no excuses. That's the motto. We want to like, basically give them no excuse for why they can't get help. And so that's why our community is free. That's why we provide free resources so that they can't say, I can't afford that, or I can't get there, or, you know, this and that. Because, of course, as an addict, we always find a reason why we can't get well.
Yes.
And so our conference is now entirely online. It's entirely free. You can pay a small fee if you want to get a DVD of the conference afterward. But otherwise, it's free, and it's going to be all online. There are some we're still looking for, like, watch parties or hosts to host it, you know, so ladies can get together and have that community aspect of it still. But it's entirely online, and we're going to have multiple topics kind of to go in a line with that whole women mentality. You know, it's not just about porn. It's not a porn conference. It is a wholeness conference. It's all types of topics. We have keynote speakers, Annie Lobert, who is from Hookers for Jesus. We have Dana Gresh, who is...
Oh, wow!
Yeah.
We love Dana.
Yeah, from Pure Freedom, a wonderful author and speaker named Lisa Whittle, and Worship by Audrey Assad, and an array of awesome testimonial speakers who are big bloggers that we're friends with, who have graciously shared their stories with us as a testimony, whether it's, and I'll just run through our topics real quick so people can know. Self-harm, forgiveness, mm-hmm. We all struggle with forgiveness. Obviously, porn addiction, I'll actually do that for the presentation myself. Marital intimacy, mm-hmm. emotional wholeness, recovering from rape or unwanted sex,
mm-hmm.
Hope after getting divorced, if you know that kind of stuff, which is
kind of
one of those topics the church likes to ignore. You know, if you've been divorced, it's kind of like we don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Dating and singleness as a Christian woman, perfectionism as a mother, and that whole plague of perfectionism, body image, insecurity, and adultery. So those are our topics, and we're just excited to be able to share that and share that with the world. We're going to have two airings, actually, of this conference. First one, September 7th. Saturday, September 7th, which is for North American time zones, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central. And then we're going to have it 1 week later for international time zone. People from across the pond can participate as well on September 14th.
So we're
going to have, and then you're going to have the whole thing on DVD if people want to have it.
Yep.
And show it. Whenever.
Yep, exactly.
How cool is this?
What an amazing thing.
Yeah.
We're very excited about that. We want to get the word out, you know, as far and wide as we can.
Yeah.
So
it's not about making money. It's about making people whole. So
how do people sign up and get more information and all that about it?
They can just go to wholeconference.com, wholeconference.com.
Okay. Well, fantastic. It's amazing. Where did the time go? We already have chewed through an hour. It's about the end of our time. What a joy it's been to reconnect with you, Crystal, and how excited to see the growth of the ministry. We're just thrilled that same freedom that Ann Jackson gave you years ago with a personal confession. You have what was freely given to you. You are freely giving to others, And you've made yourself transparent and vulnerable in a way that is giving hope to thousands and thousands of women. Thank you for what you're doing, Crystal.
Thank you for having me on again. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be back in just a second here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Well, I'm up and I'm down and I'm all around, but I'm okay if you ask me, because we don't really take the time to care like we could. I could trip, I could fall, you won't know it all, because your busyness is blinding. We don't really have the time to love like we should. And it always goes back down to the way.
Back, but we're only back to leave once again. This has been a blazing fast Pirate Monk radio show. It is, I want to get some women hooked up on this conference. I'm thinking of all these college ladies. I think I'm going to have to get the DVD, though, because Cal Poly is just getting into session at that time. So I'm going to have to get the DVD and have them do a pretend live version.
Yeah. Sounds like a grand idea. You know what? If the girls can make this virtual online conference fly, maybe the guys can learn something from the girls. Maybe we can figure out how to do one of these one day. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Come on. If the girls can do it, anything they can do, we can do better. I've got Crystal muted, so she can't say anything.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, we didn't get any phone calls. I failed. I promised to repeat the phone number and then never did. But we'd love to hear your comments, your reaction to today's show. Any further questions that you'd like us to put to Crystal, comments upon the show, or on anything else that's weighing your heart or mind, give us shoot us an email. Send it to either SamsonPodcast@gmail.com or PirateMonkRadio@gmail.com, and we'll be glad to get back to you. All right, Aaron, it's hard to say goodbye. I'm sure we'll talk between now and next week's show, though.
And then we'll fill everybody in on all of the exciting stuff we talk about.
All right, Aaron, have you made it into Tennessee yet? Oh, not Aaron, I mean Mondo.
That would be no for me. How about you, Mondo?
Yeah. I'm in Tennessee now, finally. So, yes.
And still
rolling, but in Tennessee.
And did you lose coverage at all during that trip? There are some dead spots, some dead cells there.
Yeah, I got a little spotty, but I held on by a thread. But yeah, I stayed on, so it was good.
Okay, and if you turn the radio on now, you can hear some great bluegrass and old time country music. It's about the only thing on the air out there.
That's
in
true.
East Tennessee. Yeah.
Thank God for the podcast.
All right. Well, until next week, I'm Nate Larkin. For our fearless, peerless engineer on Mondo, for the co-host from the left coast, Aaron Porter, and for our executive producer, Jay Spiegel. Goodbye. We will see you next week on the Pirate Monk Podcast. Hey, yo.
Recovery. Say whoa.